News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 9th of October, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed Sound Bites. We're going to talk about rewritable CDs and MSN AOL merger, video iPod rumors. But as you heard at the beginning of... Oh, and Dave has something he wants to say first.
You know what? If it wasn't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all.
Really? I noticed you were driving your wife's vehicle.
I got today. My wife's vehicle.
This has to be a story.
This is unbelievable.
Before you get into that, I do want to introduce our guest. Yeah. We have a strange voice and a strange man in the studio. This is Mike Falk from Falk Electric, and he is a home automation, in-house broadband person. We're going to talk to Mike about all of those things in a minute, but first, Dave has a story.
Like I said, this was unbelievable. Even my mechanic couldn't believe it.
And your mechanic's been through a lot.
Yeah, he has. So I stop on Culver Road, get $40 worth of gas.
Then which I had was to, half a tank.
Yeah, yeah, right. And I had to go on up to Home Depot and Staples. I had to get a couple things. So I hop on the express right near there at Culver. I'm going along, staying in the right-hand lane, because you get off as soon as you get on.
Sure.
You know, it's one of those deals. So I'm tooling along, and there's this other car in front of me. It's like an old Toyota or something like that, and it's making a lot of noise. I'm going along. All of a sudden, boom, I see this pipe fall out from underneath the vehicle. Can't swerve.
There's already no good end to this story.
There's no swerving to the left or right, because the left, they're passing me like nobody's business, like I'm standing still. I had to go over the pipe.
Uh-huh.
The pipe wound up lodging itself in my gas tank.
All right.
Nice.
Oh.
Here I'm doing, you know, 45 or so, and I'm hearing this rubbing and that underneath the vehicle. I quick pull over.
Yeah.
Had to pull over, and I quick shut the vehicle off. I get out, and I look in here. There's gas just spewing all over. Evidently, on my vehicle, it's a plastic gas tank.
Nice.
And the pipe... The way it was configured, this tailpipe section literally gouged itself right into the plastic.
It's probably plastic to avoid an explosion hazard when metal on metal starts scraping.
Yeah. Well, you're
probably lucky it was plastic.
I just shut that. Well, I didn't want any sparks from this pipe that I'm dragging, because I'm trying to get the pipe out. I can't. Consequently, you know, this just happened Friday. So I'm just realizing AAA had to come and tow me, and they put the stuff down to clean it all up. Then I realized this morning on the way to the show, my headset's in there, still in the vehicle. Because I just didn't want to go near the vehicle, you know, hot engine and everything else with gas spewing all over the place. And all my show prep and other stuff is still in the vehicle. So it's like, damn. How to be unorganized?
Well,
had to go
and
through that frustration. But
no, you know,
did the other guy stop?
Dave and I live in
no,
our cars.
No, the guy took off.
So you don't even have. I mean, you can't
All I remember it was like a reddish car.
Nice.
And it was loud, you know, because you could tell the muffler and all that was already gone. Well, the rest of his tailpipe section or the front up by the engine came tumbling down and went underneath my vehicle. It scared the ever-living H out of me.
I bet it did.
Because all I can think of is, I just filled up with gas.
Yeah, no kidding.
And all this gas
all
is all,
out,
and it's draining all. And I'm sitting
Yeah, but it's not like the movies. I mean, cars don't generally really blow up.
Yeah, Mythbusters tested that. They dropped an exhaust pipe and the drive shaft down, made the car stop and flip over top of itself, punctured the gas tank. It doesn't explode.
But still, no, I'm dragging a piece of pipe.
I still would have gotten out of the way myself.
You know what?
It's the idiot with the cigarette driving by you, throws it out the window.
Right, exactly. I can buy another that doesn't vehicle. Work either. I don't care to go up with car flambé.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I figured, the heck with this. I got out. I moved away from the vehicle. And like Lori was going, because I called her up after I called AAA to come and get me. And she goes, "Will you... going to move it a little farther off the road?" I says, "I ain't touching it."
Yeah, no kidding.
That thing is shut off until the car guy could. My mechanic had to put it on a lift, and from there, he still couldn't figure out, how the hell did you wedge that under there?
And all you explain to him you didn't actually do it on purpose? And you
I explained to him. He goes,
"You don't really have the blueprints?"
In all the years, we've never seen something like this. He goes, "And oh, by the way, you better bring a few gallons of gas. We could only get a gallon's worth of gas out of the old tank."
I bet.
I was, all right, because they've never had that situation.
Yeah.
See, that's always bad when the mechanic says that. Been in business 40 years, never seen anything like that.
Yeah, right. All right, we're going to talk to Mike Falk now. Mike is chief cook and bottle washer at Falk Electric, and he does home automation, in-house broadband over power lines. Tell us a little bit about home automation. I remember the old days of the X10 controls.
Right. The home automation started way back when people wanted to turn on and off their Christmas tree without crawling behind it. That was the old, put a wire in the wall, put a switch on, and voila, no more pine needles stuck in your hair.
Right.
Now, you can actually purchase modules that either are hardwired or simply plug into the wall that allow you to do that, and the modules speak to each other via your electrical system.
How cool is that? Mm. So, in other words, I can have like a control module somewhere, plug it into the wall, and control all the bits and pieces around my house.
That is correct. And it is a blend of technologies. It's a blend of electrical technology. It's a blend of computer programming and knowing how to address things. And homes, as we see them, are changing. If you have a house with multiple entrances, but you can't decide which door to go in with three armloads of groceries, you could have a button at each door that does the same thing. It turns on all the interior path lights in your house.
Nice.
You can have a panic button next to your bed that turns on every light in the place.
Light it up like a Christmas tree.
Light it up like a Christmas tree.
Cool.
Make our genie
nice.
Proud.
Nice. So this is all doable. Now, do I need to build a new home to do this?
You do not. In fact, this technology lends itself to existing facilities because in most cases, we do not need to run a lot of new wire in your walls. The best example...
For a guy who owns a 120-year-old home, that makes me happy.
Right. A good example is your garage. Say that you needed to turn on the lights in your garage in the middle of the night.
My garage is detached, but I have electric out there.
Right. You've already got your electrical out there. All that we have to do is alter the light on the garage and then go next to the bedside and tap a switch down to the nearest electrical source, and there you go.
Cool.
And this works the other way, too, because I can't tell you how many times I've looked out at the garage and thought, oh, the light's still on.
Exactly.
All right.
Amelia, go turn the light off.
Exactly. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more with Mike Falk. We've got a couple of other things to talk about, internet protocol names. We'll do that after the break. Join us on the other side with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mike Falk, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Whams, back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed Soundbites. Now, I need to talk more about this with Mike. Mike, home automation, so I can actually control what specifically?
Well, you could control your coffee maker. You could control any light in your home. You could control your washing machine, your Cuisinart. You can monitor your
anything
hot
I can
water
plug
gear.
In.
Anything that takes electricity. It'll actually, there are devices that allow you to monitor your hot water heater usage, and if it starts going during the day, it'll let you know.
Nice.
Close your drapes. Open your drapes.
Well, especially with anything. The energy costs, you know, going up. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a better handle on controlling, like you say, the heat and opening and closing blinds and everything else, I mean, you might pay up front, but in the long run, it might be well worth it.
Now, more importantly to the geeks in our audience, can I control this with my computer?
Oh, most definitely.
Oh, yes. Tell me about this.
Yes, you can. Once the infrastructure is in place, you can...
Hold on one second. I just want to remind everybody, you can give us a call. Join us. Ask Mike questions. That's what he's here for. Give Mike Falk a call at 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's the Choice One toll-free line at 800-295-1180. And, of course, if you're a Verizon wireless customer, it's *1180. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
Once the infrastructure is placed into your house... you can tap into it with your PC and move the addressing around, change lighting levels, interface with pretty much anything that's been connected. Then once you've gotten that step passed, you can do it from the office, and you can do it from other places too.
So I can actually log into my machine at home.
Yes.
Securely, I'm assuming.
Exactly.
And then like if I decide, you know what, I'm going to be late, so I'm not going to turn on the coffee maker at 5. I'm going to turn it on at 5:30.
That's correct.
Well, it'd also be cool that, you know, like you were saying, though, lighting the house up like a Christmas tree, having a little bit better control if you're going to go away. You know, you're going to be on vacation for a day or two,
right,
or something pops up, and, oh, shoot, I wish I had the lights on.
Right, right.
Be able to go from work and say, all right, yeah, like you said, I'm not going to be home until, say, after 9 o'clock, and you want it lit up then from home or from work, be able to change it so it comes... you know, up and lit like a Christmas tree when you get home.
Nice. All right, we have a call for Mike. We have Jeff from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Well, actually, not even a question. You're just talking about home automation, et cetera, and actually my house is automated. And one of the interesting things I do is you can program your computer to set up macros, and I have one of them says set up a movie, and what it does is it draws the blinds in the basement, it turns off all the lights, it turns on the program for my DVD, and it starts popping popcorn.
Nah.
Very sweet.
So you punch one button, and it all happens for you.
I talk to the computer. You set up macros, your voice command.
Right, right.
It says, I can say, turn on all the lights, turns on the lights, whatever macros you want to set up, you have it set up. So it's amazing.
It saves those 200-button remotes that some of those systems need, too.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely, yeah.
Jeff, what a great idea.
No, it's like I said, it's fun coming home, and... you talk to your computer, and it does whatever you set it up to do.
What else you got hooked up to it?
Virtually every single appliance and every single light in the house, the garage, I have it hooked up so I can also close the garage. So if I forget to close the garage, I can do that. I have cameras set up, so I want to view camera the front yard, the backyard, in the house.
Now, can it warn you if you didn't close the garage?
It doesn't. Does that? No. Actually, the way I have it set up, it doesn't.
But it can. Mike is nodding. He said, don't. This is radio, Mike. You have to actually
see. That's right. If I nod at the microphone, no one sees it. You can actually set sensors up that will tell you when things are open and close.
But I have a camera out there so that I could actually see it if I wanted to.
Oh, there you go.
So see, that's... the front door also.
So wait a minute. Now, I'm sorry. Now, hold on. And I have to ask both you and Mike this. So can this thing talk back to me? So, like, can it email me at work or instant message me to say... say somebody just opened your garage door, so I can now get online and look at the camera and see what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. You also put a sensor there, an infrared sensor, so if somebody breaks a sensor and like in your room, the light up for you, turn your light on, or say I haven't bought this module that if somebody breaks into your house, you could have it set up to call you, call the police, turn the camera on, and take pictures so that this way, you know, you're alerted to everything that goes on.
Nice. Wild. Yeah,
this has been growing quite rapidly. I remember when I was a kid, we got little appliance timers that would turn the lamp on when we were on vacation.
And that is kind of what some of the appliances, if you don't want to reroute your electric, you just plug in a module like that, and it, like you said, it talks through the wires so you can turn it on and off, and they have little lamp modules. It's real easy.
And webcams are getting to be so cheap these days that the nanny cam was a big thing. You put a little tiny camera in, so you have webcams around your house, and you can look in on your house, see what's going on.
Cool.
Since the cameras are addressed, and with an IP address, a lot of them are. You can go on if you're at work and you just want to check your house out. You can view all your cameras. You can pan. You can record from anywhere in the world.
Cool. Actually, when we come back, I got to ask. I have more questions. I have more questions about this. But so we're kind of skipping a couple of other things. But we've got news. Megan Mattis is coming in with the news. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mike Falk, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. Give us a call and talk to Mike or talk to us about other things. And we'll be back after the news with a whole lot more on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. We have, as our special guest, Mike Falk of Falk Electric. And I'm monopolizing you, but I'm fascinated by this subject. Now, I have a couple of questions. First, what I'd really like something that would turn lights on when I entered a room and turn them off when my daughter left the room. That's what I really like, whether it was, you know, all of us or if we had to, like, wear a little Star Trek badge or it could sense our body heat or something. That's what I'd really like. But, well, go ahead.
Well, if you were at Bill Gates' home, that's very similar to what it would be like. You get your access pin, and as you move around, it monitors where you are and changes the artwork and the lighting and all that stuff. That
I got to be honest, it's really, really unlikely that at any time in the near or distant future I will be invited to Bill Gates' home. I'm just making that plain.
You sure?
Yeah.
Well, they had something similar to that at Xerox PARC 20 years ago, where your security badge basically identified you to the system, and when a phone call came in, the phone you were standing next to rang.
Right.
Because the system knew where
were. They do that now with hot cubicles,
yep.
where you go into a company and you don't own a cubicle. Whichever one is open, you can sit at. And when you log in, you get your desktop. The phone becomes yours.
Right.
They haven't gone quite so far as to change the picture on the wall for you, but that's certainly not impossible. But that's doable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is exactly doable. And, very simply, or more simply, in your own home, you could do it with a motion detector buried in the room somewhere, whether it's in the nose of the teddy bear or it's some other thing in the clock or whatnot. It doesn't have to look like a motion detector, right, but it would detect someone coming in the room and flip cool. the lights on, and it would detect no one in the room and cut them off after whatever predetermined time.
And can I set it to a certain height so if the dogs walk through the room, it doesn't catch them, but if they... Yeah. Put their paws up on the table, it yells at them.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
I really want.
That would be nice.
Now, listen, I am perfectly capable of plugging things in and out of my wall sockets, but I am not the guy who wants to go into the panel and go play around. Is that necessary?
Yes, it actually can be very necessary for these sorts of systems. And I am the guy that goes into the panel and does these alterations.
Perfect.
I took the panel off of our new building because we had to wire our front sign. I took the panel off, looked at it, and said, no.
Yeah.
and I do Ethernet wire. You know, right, Ethernet right, wire right. is what? That's 1-2 volts maybe?
Right, right, right. And now you're looking at stuff that's 110, 220, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Those screws went right back on.
Yeah. So you do that. What is involved in all of that? And again, join us. 222-1180. 800-295-1180, *1180 if you're a Verizon Wireless customer. Go ahead, Mike.
There's some basic things that should go probably into every home automation system, and largely it is so that you have trouble-free installation of your items and so they do not blow up on you prematurely, causing undue economic hardship.
Those are good things if you can prevent them. Preventing them is good.
Three items that folks would probably be using would be a TVSS, or a transient voltage surge suppressor, otherwise known as a whole house surge suppressor. This is an item that's a big capacitor that's installed at your main electrical panel, and it becomes the shortest path for extra electricity to be absorbed should it come to your home.
In this thunderstorm-prone area, people should have that anyway for their computers and, well, and other electronic equipment.
Exactly. It'll protect your stereo and those other things. And, of course, the better the TVSS, the better the warranty that's provided by the manufacturer for your electronic goods. These X10 modules are very prone to be to either flip out or burn out with stray voltage like that. So the TVSS is important to protect your investment. Another item is a bridge. And basically what the bridge does is it allows both sides of your residential electrical system or all three sides of your commercial electrical system to talk to each other easily. Signals can come in on one leg, be bridged over to the other two, amplified a little bit, and sent back out. Some of the X10 and other home automation devices that are out there speak a little bit more softly than others, and they can't be heard very well. So the bridge helps to ameliorate that.
Nice. And now, can I block like my neighbor from controlling my lights or looking in my cameras? Or
well, that depends on where the transformer is that you're connected to. Your electrical transformer, that big garbage can thing on the pole out near the street.
Right.
Sometimes multiple homes are tapped off the same transformer. That transformer is the wall that the signals run into. It is quite possible that your neighbor will have his lights go on and off if the addressing scheme is the same and you're pushing the buttons, watching him run around the house trying to figure out why.
Yeah.
It's like the cordless phone that your neighbor might be on the same frequency, so you change your buttons.
Right,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah. There is, with this technology, there is a blocking device that can be installed in your panel also that will keep the signals in your house.
That's what it looks like. I found a website selling them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So you can do all of this at Falk Electric.
And I can do all of this.
Excellent. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about rumors of a video iPod. They're rife. Is it true? Analysts seem to be divided pretty equally between yay and nay. We'll talk to Steve about that when we come back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Mike Falk, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's Coach Chuck. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. I said we'd talk about the video iPod, but first we have John from Fairport on the phone. More questions from Mike about home automation. Hiya, John. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. Mike, I have a question about managing the temperature of my house remotely by computer.
Okay.
Typically, thermostats are not AC powered. So how does that fit into your home automation suggestions here?
The thermostat modules can actually, the thermostat that's capable of sending the correct signals would have to be retrofitted into your system. But once it was there, either the signals can be low voltage skimmed back to your PC or they can go over the power lines.
So there is a box you can buy.
Right. There is a, yeah. There is a box
English.
You can buy.
Yeah. It can be done.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's the other nice thing. We're talking about turning on this and that, but particularly in the winter, a lot of people like to keep their homes cold. Colder during the day when nobody's there,
when
and
nobody's
then warm
there.
Them up just before they come home. But again, you figure, well, if I turn it on at 4:30, by the time I leave at 5, I get home at 5:15, 5:20, it's warm. But now suddenly I'm at work and it's like 6:30, 7 o'clock before I know I'm going to leave.
Right.
So I could signal it now, turn it up now, and I'm on my way home.
That's right.
Very nice. Very nice. But we're going to talk about video iPod rumors. There's an announcement coming up, and there's been a lot of news about that from the various places. There's 100 different sites on the net that purport to be the word in Apple rumors. And so far, they seem to be split pretty evenly between a yay and nay. So, Steve, what's the story?
Well, the rumors of a video iPod have been circulating for years. And every time Apple comes out with an announcement or there's a trade show coming out, is this going to be the one where the video iPod comes out? And Steve Jobs has said repeatedly that it's not ready. The market isn't ready yet for a video iPod. The screens on iPods and most PDAs are too small to be able to do video that well. So last month, when the iPod announcement came out and the Nano was announced, everyone was saying, all right, the video iPod. And then it wasn't.
Right.
And then so last week, Apple sent another invitation to the press about another event coming up next Wednesday. And everyone said, all right, the video iPod. Well, 2 weeks ago, he was interviewed in Forbes and several other magazines saying that, you know, the market still isn't ready yet for a video iPod.
The market is ready in terms of demand. The market isn't ready in terms of technology, for what it would cost to have one.
So 2 weeks ago, he said it wasn't the time for a video iPod. Maybe 2 weeks will have made the difference. But there's already video-type devices. The Arcos Media Player, even the Sony PSP, plays video. But
in fact, if you've seen any of the ads out now, you know, let's say, this movie now out in video and PSP.
Right. PSP uses a proprietary, of course, it's Sony, uses a proprietary disc format. It's a 3-inch disc in its own special format. But the issue is the screen size. The PSP has a 3-inch screen. Some of the Arcos players have a 7-inch screen, but that's $700.
Right. We should explain PSP, though.
Yeah, the Sony PSP is their PlayStation Portable. It's a tiny, you know, handheld gaming machine with a 3 or 4-inch screen.
And when you're watching little Mario blobs bounce around, that's a fine size. It's
right. In
fact,
I was watching a kid play a baseball game the other day, and at first I thought he was watching a movie on it because the graphics are just so amazing,
right?
The video quality. But it's a tiny screen, and it's great if one person is going to watch a movie in the back seat of the car, for example. But it's much more common these days to have a laptop for the kids in the back of the car. 3 or 4 people can watch it, and you pipe the video feed through your stereo. And then what Apple and Jobs always try to mention is the copyright issues, that they've built things into the iTunes software for Mac and Windows and into the iPod to try to minimize the copyright theft. They've done agreements with all of the record labels to sell songs legally through the iTunes Music Store. So everyone's expecting that he's working on this with the movie companies, Sony and Warner and whatnot. And how well are movies going to be able to come down to your computer? That's even on your computer is a big deal, because movies are so big, the bandwidth necessary for legal movies, we're still not quite there yet. But a lot of people take home movies. Now, the current iPods, the Nano and the full-size iPod, can do photos. So you can take your photo slideshow with you and show people off, but again, on a little tiny screen. Mm-hmm. So a video iPod is going to have a bigger screen to be that usable, and then it kind of loses what makes an iPod special.
Well, and then you have to define what you mean by video.
Right.
I mean, if you're talking about full-length movies, no.
Right.
But you can go to CVS and buy a $40 video camera that takes 20 minutes of video.
And already now, through the iTunes Music Store, when you buy certain music albums, you get a music video with it. You can already watch music videos on the music store. So it's a logical next step to download those music videos to your iPod. But again, the screen size. They have to make the screen bigger.
But people are downloading video clips to their phones.
And the cell phone companies are pushing that too. For TV commercials are a big thing.
Right.
But yeah, so
the quality still just as
right, big. The quality just isn't that well that there with the H.264 and built into QuickTime and the 3G compression, it makes the video pretty good quality, but on a really tiny screen.
Right, and I think like anything else, as long as the demand stays up there, they'll keep pushing to try to come up with that technology.
Right, we'll be back in just and we'll let you know next week what got announced. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Mike and Rob and me, Nick, on Soundbites 1180 WHAM.
WHAM on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. One of the things that's going on in the news right now is we have something that runs the internet. When you go to call the domain naming system, when you go to a website, for example, soundbites.org, you just type in soundbites.org. Well, the internet doesn't understand names. It only understands numbers, like, you know, 64.29.38.57, whatever that is. Nobody's going to remember that. So what they have are what are called domain name servers. When you type in soundbites.org, it goes to one of the domain name servers on the internet and says, where is that? And it gets back that number, and then it can find the machine. Well, right now, the United States controls the domain naming system. If you want a name, you have to ask a company, one of a couple of companies in the United States.
The United States government. They're companies in the United States.
Well, but the United States government oversees them. And what's happening is the European Union and a couple of other China and Japan are now requesting that the United States give up control of that and let the international community run the domain name system for the world wide web. Not surprisingly, the United States is resisting.
No lie.
Yeah, is resisting Jeez. That is resisting that big time, as a matter of fact. The National Telecommunications and Information Administration, I didn't even know we had one of those. The State Department, the Subcommittee on Telecommunications and the Internet, seem to be saying that they do not want to share. They're not good at playing with others, and the European Union and other nations are demanding that the U.S. share responsibility for that.
Well, the same sort of issues popped up when they decided to let other companies register names. It used to be only one company could right. register a name on the Internet because they were afraid that, that the same name would get registered by two different companies. And that right. sort of has worked itself out. There's probably some legitimate issues about Internet numbers getting assigned the same place by two different assigners.
Well, but what they're saying is rather than having the United States make these decisions, the U.N. should make these decisions.
The UN can't do zip now as it is anyway, as far as agreeing on things and everything else. And, you know, it could open the door for, you know, more porn and everything else because, oh, if this country is a member of that. And,
I don't
you know,
think you can have much more porn on the Internet.
Well, one of their proposals was to make a .xxx domain level like .com that we're aware of now and, right. and sort of, I don't know, about force all the adult vendors to use that domain. So then it's much easier to protect your kids by not letting that domain through.
Well, let's take it another level. Let's leave the UN out of it. Why should the United States have control of the .jp domain name? Shouldn't that be Japan? Why should the United States have control over the .ca domain name? Shouldn't that be Canada?
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. You know, it's not about who can deliver porn. No. It's about who gets to be part of the .ca domain.
Yeah. No, I can see that.
Right now, I don't believe there's anything that stops me from saying, oh, I'd like to be soundbites.jp.
A lot of people do that. I know people that have websites .uk because it's cheaper, I guess.
I don't know. But the point is, they're saying that that they'd like to have control over their own company. Did you know there's a .us? You don't have to use .com or .org or .net. There's like 100 and change of them.
There was a proposal a few years ago we talked about to give every street address in the country an Internet address. So street, you know, number.street.state.ny.us would be your Internet address.
My heavens, no.
Oh, no.
And that's what we said then.
Holy mother of pearl.
Forget it. Talk about a nightmare come true.
Right. And then I got to let everybody know where I live?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Not likely.
Yeah, right. I'll pay you a nickel and be on at your house.
The term of something freezing over?
Exactly. So at any rate, that's the big thing now. And if you'd like to talk about that after the break, we can do that. But it's an interesting problem right now. You're right. On the one hand, there's a lot of questions about that. But on the other hand, I think countries should be able to do their own names. I don't see that that's something that we should be controlling for them.
Well, we invented it, so we should have control.
Yeah.
Yeah, we invented it, but you know, we
No,
being,
Al Gore did.
Al Gore, yeah.
Al Gore did. Actually,
Vince Cerf.
Invented it.
We should get Vince Cerf and Tim Berners-Lee together and see what they think. They right. invented the
Tim
Internet.
Tim Berners-Lee invented it.
He was over
in Switzerland.
Yeah.
So I don't know that...
Adam Macintosh.
Adam
Macintosh,
yeah. But it's an interesting problem. Sure, maybe we should certainly control the U.S. one. Maybe we should even control .com and .edu, but we certainly shouldn't control .uk or .jp or .ca or .it for Italy.
It doesn't belong to us, actually.
It doesn't belong to us, and I don't see that we should be the ones who are controlling
it.
I think that's only fair.
I agree on that.
Well, all right. We seem to have all agreed on that.
But now getting the government to agree on that, forget it.
I feel more comfortable now. Thank you very much. All right, listen, when we come back, we've got some very interesting things to talk about. One of them will be, rewritable CDs.
Yes.
They can save you money, but you have to know what you're doing. We'll be talking
Uncluttered to... Unclutter the confusion.
We'll unclutter the confusion with Dave Enright. And you know it's in bad state when we say Dave will unclutter the confusion. That's the interesting part of that sentence.
That's
right
an oxymoron.
There. But we'll do that when Megan Mathis is going to be in with a whole lot more wonderful news. And then on the other side of that, we'll have a whole lot more sound bites with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with home automation and broadband over power line expert Mike Falk, with Rob Linton, who is keeping us semi-straight and semi-narrow today. And I'm Nick Francesco, and you're watching Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
If we were only TV.
Holy mother of pearl. That was the shortest news break I've ever been through. I thought we'd had at least another minute or two. Apparently not.
We recovered good.
I know.
We wanted to see you guys sweat.
Whew. Okay, we're back. We said we'd be talking about rewritable CDs, CDRWs. You can burn them, you can reburn them. They're multi-session, you can reformat them. Closing it. How do we make sense of all of this? Well, here it is. We just asked Dave.
Yeah, I've been getting a number of questions about this. And the simplest way to put it is CDRs are burn once. CDRWs are you can burn them and erase and rewrite to them. But the key thing is, especially when you're using CDRs, just because you do that one burn, there still might be space on there. So what I've been telling...
Right, so you end up wasting a lot of space
on
the CDR.
Yeah, if you get a bunch of photos. So what I've been telling...
And the CDRs are the right ones.
CDRs are right once. CDRWs, you can erase supposedly up to 1,000 times. I haven't tried it, nor would I...
And that's the key, is you have to erase them in order to write more stuff on it.
Right. So here's the thing. Now, we're just going to work with just, say, the CDR. Because
sure.
CDRW, the only difference is you can erase it and start all over. So with that premise, a CDR, when you go to burn it, what I usually tell folks is, usually in Easy Creator or any of these other programs, you can create folders. So what I would suggest you do, if you say you're going to back up or move photos to a CDR, you first create a folder on that CDR. And you can label whatever you want and say a particular date. You then double-click on that folder to open it up. Save now all those pictures or whatever you want to back up, whether it's your Quicken or anything, into that folder. Now it'll go ahead and burn in a multi-session, which most programs default to anyways. Now if you want to add to that, what you can do is create another folder. And it could still have the same pictures as before, but maybe you revised them or a document or anything else. Now it goes into that separate folder. So if you went to the folder, say, from last week, and it had a document in there, say your resume, and you want to redo it but have it backed off, you create a separate folder. Now there's two instances of your resume on there, but they're in different folders.
Right, so you just pick the newest folder, maybe name them by date.
Yeah, and you can keep adding to it. Until the disk gets full or you close the session. Once you close a session, that's it. Now, another thing folks have been asking is, well, I want to take a couple files off of there. No, you can't.
Well, you can copy them, but you can't remove
them. So they're not
them.
Really, it's not really like a hard drive.
Correct. You can make them. There's other programs you can make it. Treat it like a big floppy.
Like in CD or direct CD, but that means that only your computer can read those disks.
And it's got to have certain files on that computer to read it.
And in fact, no other computer can read that CD until you close it.
Right. So the simplest way to do it is, get things organized, is create folders on that CD. And all the programs allow you to create these folders. So by having the folders or description names on those folders, it's going to make your life a lot easier, and you can keep backing things up, even though they're already in this other folder.
One of the confusions that, a lot of people run into is when you burn data a second time on the CD, make a second session, it shows up as another drive letter in many cases.
Right.
So F, G, H, I, J, you have too many sessions, you run out of drive letters.
Right. Now, the other thing you need to remember is you need to have a rewritable CD drive. You have to have a special drive.
Which most all of them are these days.
Right. And you have to have rewritable CDs, so you have to have a different type of CD.
Right.
Now, I know a whole lot of people who say, oh, I meant to back all that up, but there was so little of it, I didn't want to waste a whole CD. And on one hand, a CD is only a dime. But on the other hand, you can now put multiple folders on one CD.
Yeah, you put the multiple folders, and then that way it won't conflict. If you just put them out there on the CD, and now you're trying to rewrite that same folder name, it's not going to allow you.
Right.
Yeah, we had a customer this week brought in three floppies from an ancient computer running Microsoft Works version 3, we found out, the data on it, and needed it converted to Office 2000, or 2002, whatever we are now. Three floppies was just over 3 megs.
Right.
I felt so bad burning an entire 700 meg CD with 3 megs of data.
But on the other hand,
because its new computers don't have floppy drives anymore.
It's a nickel if you buy enough of them.
Yeah,
and
but
you can always buy those little, you spend more money and buy those little mini CDs and do it that way, not for a Mac.
But what he can do with that CD, even though you wrote those few files, he can still put that into it as long as the session's not closed, create another folder. So if he makes any changes to those documents, he can then put them into that other folder.
It's probably, I think there were like 10-year-old floppies that he found cleaning a desk out.
Oh, yeah.
What's on these? I don't have a floppy drive anymore.
Yeah. We get that a lot.
I had somebody called about a 5 1/4-inch floppy drive.
We get that every now and then in Cider, that the Apple Cider Users Group. The old Apple IIs and the old PCs used 5 1/4-inch drives.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved to 3.5 about, 1984?
Right. An 8-inch drive. I still have an 8-inch disk.
Yeah. Yes, and how do I convert my 5 1/4s to 3.5? So you need to find a computer that has both drives.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we still do. I've still got a couple 5 1/4s. And most of the machines nowadays, you pay extra to have a floppy thrown into.
Yeah, no kidding.
They're extra.
Yeah, they're only 1 meg capacity. It's not worth bothering with.
I know. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We've got Skip from Henrietta. Welcome, Skip. What's your question?
Hello there. I hate to waste a call on a little tiny question when I got so many, but I'll start with this.
Start with this. It's not a waste of a call, I hope.
Well, anyway.
We'll find out.
I got a mode I get into on my computer that I don't understand. When I go up on the internet, things come up reduced size every time. And I make them bigger, do my thing, and get out. Come back in again, they're reduced size again. I thought just exiting in full size was supposed to change them to stay that way.
When you say reduced size, do you mean the individual items or the whole window?
The window comes up, with the thing up in the upper corner there, full size.
Right.
Reduced size, whatever full that size is.
The full size, if you do the zoom button, to zoom the window to full size, that doesn't count. You need to manually drag the window to the size you want it to be and then close it so it remembers that size. Zoom to full size is almost sort of a random.
Yeah, whatever
that
it was.
Remember.
If it was a quarter of the screen and you hit the full screen, then it pops, just whoop, blows it out.
So you want to drag the bottom right hand corner
and stretch it out.
And stretch the window manually to the size you want it to be.
Okay, so it's got to be a manual stretch for it to remember it.
Yeah.
Okay, and
that can also be overridden by the website. The website can set what size they want your window to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually what happens is some website sets a tiny window size for a pop-up, and then your next window opens, and it's really tiny.
Well, there's a nice little tip. If you're using Firefox, for example, under Tools, Options, and remember, you can get this up on the web later. Under Tools, Options, you can go in and change how...
Under advanced features.
Under advanced features, you can change how various things handle the website, including handle your windows, including whether or not they're allowed to open and close
or open it up in a separate window.
Open separate windows or change the size or whatever. Our next caller, Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
When I highlight something, I don't know if you know what I mean, on the internet, it won't bring the page up. And I got a compact, and it's an older one. It's a Pentium 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what RAMs it is.
Now, what you're saying is when you click on a link.
Yes, click on a link, right?
Nothing happens?
when I click on a link, I'm talking to my friend, nothing happens. It freezes. It's like it freezes up. It won't bring the page up, whatever I want to look at.
This happens on every...
Just all the time. Sometimes when I unplug the modem and shut the computer off and then turn it back on, it'll work.
So it works for a while, but then it stops.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things that can cause this. One, of course, and we haven't mentioned it whole show yet. We got into the second hour without mentioning the security tango.
Yeah, did that.
Okay.
Been doing that.
Perfect, perfect. Yeah. For the rest of you, that's at securitytango.com.
Right.
And that's a good thing to do. But on the other hand,
Are you using Internet Explorer?
Yes, I am.
But what version of Internet Explorer? If you're using an old version, since that's an old...
What version of Internet Explorer? Excuse me.
Well, we can't be sitting here and having you talk to your friend. We can just give you a few things to, you know, try out. You might want to try is looking at what version of Internet Explorer you're running, because if you're running an older version, like 5, you might have trouble displaying other pages. One of the other things I would say just before we go from you is to download and run Firefox.
And the other thing is, it may well be that you have not enough RAM. Every page you open is going to use a little more memory, a little more memory. And Windows is very bad about taking back memory. So it may be that if you have not much RAM in your system, you eventually get to the point where the system freezes because it can't open anything else on the system. Our next caller, Scott from Greece. Welcome, Scott. What's your question?
Hi, I have iMac G5, and question is my wife and I share the computer together, signing on different screen error names and stuff like that, and I've downloaded like all the pictures and stuff, photos and stuff into iPhoto into the library under my name, and when my wife brings up hers, she can't access it. I was wondering if there's a way to go into system preferences or something to share, let's say, that specific program with her.
Yes, what you need to do is put your iPhoto library in the shared folder. In the users folder, each user on the computer has their own private folder and no one else can see what's in there.
Your own private Idaho.
Your own private Idaho. Things you put in the shared folder, each user can see. So there's two ways about it. On your username in iPhoto, you can publish your photos to your network, which is just your computer. Mm-hmm. And then the other user can see the photos through that shared library. Or you can put your physical library files in the shared folder, and then your wife's username can tell iPhoto to point to that folder as well.
So I just drag that into that?
Right. And then you'll have to tell your iPhoto in iPhoto preferences. There's a section to tell it where your library is, or when it can't find your library anymore, the next time you launch it, will ask you where the library is. Now, the trick there is that both users will have the same library. And if she adds photos to the library, they'll show up on your library too. So if you want to have a separate library and a shared library, there's a program you can download called iPhoto Library Manager, and that lets you have multiple libraries. Some people like to have a library for the kids' pictures, a library for work pictures, so being able to have separate iPhoto libraries also helps keep the main library smaller.
Perfect. Our next caller is Judy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Judy. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Right. Peachy, how are you?
Good, thanks. I just want to tell you guys that I love your show, and I listen to you every week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a problem. We took our card from our digital camera, took it to Walmart to the Kodak machine, and put it onto a disc.
Right.
And thinking we would come home and put it in our DVD player, and it doesn't work. And we don't know what we're doing wrong.
Well, we probably
thought we'd be able to watch them on TV.
Right. At this point, actually, you're probably not doing anything wrong. It's just that your DVD player can't read that type of disc.
So you mean there's other DVD players out there something else we could buy that it would work on?
Anything built in the last 4 or 5 years will be able to read a photo JPEG disc, which is what it's doing. It's DVD players were designed to read DVD video.
DVDs only.
DVD video only.
Right.
Newer players, in fact, oftentimes they'll be written on it. They'll read a photo CD. They'll read a JPEG disc.
Uh-huh.
The one I have has like 8 or 9 symbols across the front of all the different formats that it'll actually read.
You want to find a DVD player that can read a JPEG CD.
The good news is they're very common nowadays and not terribly expensive.
Yeah.
Is there anyone specifically that you would suggest that we buy?
Pretty much doesn't matter. I wanted a second DVD player in my bedroom, so I went to one of the local department stores, found one for $30 after rebate.
Yeah,
it almost works better than my $100 VCR.
You just got to make sure that it'll read multiple formats. That's the key.
Yeah, the main format you want to read is
JPEG. Photo JPEG. Or photo CD. It also depends on what format the disc was burned in at the other end.
But most of them will do multiples of those, so all you need to do is ask the salesperson for a little help with that. When we come back, much of the internet went dark last week. Was it terrorism, technical problems, or just a little hissy fit? Join us after the break as we find out on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Last week, the various networks... Let me give you some background here. The various networks that make up the internet pay each other for the traffic that goes through them. So Sprint, MCI, places like that pay each other for the amount of traffic. Normally, the amounts work out enough that it's a very small payment from one to the other. Well, last week, a huge portion of the internet went dark when one of those networks had a hissy fit about the amount they were paying another network. Now people are saying the government should control it all. Who should control it all, and why doesn't the marketplace work?
Have the government control it?
Yeah, I think that's a little
silly. They can't even organize.
But for those of you who are wondering...
I don't want to go there.
But for those of you who are wondering why you couldn't get to a lot of places on the net last week, that's why. Two of the companies just got a little porky at each other about how much they were paying each other.
You let the government do it, and they'll screw it up like a free lunch.
Yeah, well, it's going to be... That would be interesting, and we don't want to go there. So, no. But we've got a couple of questions. First, we had a shy caller who wanted to know how to make a copyright sign. I assume they mean the C in a circle,
yeah.
And they want to be able to do that in Word or OpenOffice.org Writer or in one of those. What you need to do, first you have to actually have whatever your
Word
program
or Excel.
Is, whatever Word,
I
or
mean,
Excel,
Word or...
And then you go to the Insert menu, and from there... You type, you insert a special character, and it will bring up a font, a symbol font, and you pick the symbol you want, double-click on it.
In the font you want.
Close that window, and when you go back, you'll see it there. So it's really simple to do, and they're an amazing number.
That doesn't sound really simple. On the Macintosh, you type Option G and you get copyright. Option R gives you a registered trademark, and Option 2 gives you a trademark.
Option G gives you copyright.
Well, because Option C gives you the cedilla.
Okay. Actually, there are shortcuts there, too, but I'm not going to try to tell everybody about them. I'm just going to say, if you really want to do that, that's the way to do
it. Plus, once they get that, they can resize it to any place size they want.
It's just a character, like an A or a B, so you can choose any size you want on it.
Right. And it just becomes a character. So that's the easiest way to do it. Insert special character, and you're on your way. I think that makes it easy and simple. And we also get... I should talk a little bit about our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like to remind you. We'll talk about those after the next break. But before that, one of the things that you can do is email us questions. And Dave has a very interesting one that came to us at soundbites.org.
Yeah, this was a rather interesting one because I hadn't run into this before. But I guess it's going to happen more and more, as newer, people get new monitors and they want to get rid of the older one. I had a gentleman, this was Jim from Shortsville, wrote us, and said, my monitor expired overnight. Sorry to hear that. It was a 17-inch CTR. Hope didn't suffer too much.
Yeah, no kidding.
My first question is, where can I dispose of it?
And that's a tough question because you can't just throw them away anymore.
Right. There's a number of recycling centers around. that you could call. CompUSA there for a while was taking in dead monitors. They had a program where you could, because you, like you said, you just can't put it out to the road because those tubes.
It's classified as a hazardous waste. You should be able to call your garbage company and ask them what they want to do with hazardous waste, like a monitor.
Right. And yeah, you can make arrangements or to the recycling center.
The Rochester Computer Recycling
will take it. But it's
a lot of those places,
you.
You pay them to haul away hazardous material.
Because they get charged a container fee.
Yeah, it's all the lead in the monitor that makes it a hazardous material.
And they got to put it in a container and pack it and everything else. Now, the second part of his question was, and I'll always love these, because it doesn't cost me anything. Secondly, I am interested in purchasing an LCD flat screen monitor.
Great idea.
17-inch. Any recommendations?
First recommendation?
Go to 19-inch.
Exactly.
If you're going to spend money, what the heck? Really, 15s are dirt cheap.
Dirt cheap.
17s are pittance. And 19-inch now have started to come down because of the holidays. We're starting to get into, you know, you're seeing the... I hate to say it. I already saw
Don't
Christmas wrap.
All right, let's... Doggone it. It's not even Halloween yet, okay?
Skipped Halloween and Thanksgiving.
It's always bothered me when I saw Christmas stuff up before Thanksgiving. Now we're seeing it up before Halloween. Jesus
Heck,
crap.
Halloween stuff was in the store in July.
I don't get it. I don't like it, and I don't want it. Stop it now, all of you.
But the thing of it is, though, they are already starting to ramp up.
I'll come looking. Doggone it. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
But anyways.
I'm sorry. Apparently, I need to just
settle down.
Rebalance my meds.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just relax. Save your heart for better things. But no, literally, they're starting to ramp up some of the sales and the deals and everything else, getting ready for the holidays. Because of the economic times right now and... The economy is really worried on how Christmas is going to go, and especially the computer world. You know, if energy costs are going to be rising through the roof, that you're going to be paying double for your electric and heat. You know, maybe buying that new computer or this option or that option might not happen. So that's why they're trying to really fight over your dollars for the upcoming season.
And just like most products, the next better product isn't that much more. A 15-inch LCD starts about $200. The 17
less than.
I'm searching it at a web, you know, name brand web page here. So a 15-inch was like $200. A 17-inch was like $250. The 19-inch is like $300. So depending on the quality of the monitor you get. And what's really cool is you can get LCD televisions now that have computer jacks in them.
Yep.
So you can use it as a television or a monitor on your computer.
Flip it between the two. But definitely, you want to check those out because there's some real good deals. And the other advantage is it's less glare, and it takes up a heck of a lot less space on your desktop. You've got a big 17 or 19-inch, you know, CRT on there right now, and all of a sudden you go to a flat screen, it's like, whoa. Where did you get all this desk?
We see a lot of that with the graphic designers that Jesse Group supports on the Macintosh, that 20-inch monitors were about as small as you wanted to get in graphic design. Mm-hmm. And they're huge. They weigh 100 pounds. They're like 20 inches deep. And a lot of the people had special desks made to fit these giant monitors. And now they're all getting replaced with LCDs that are only an inch thick. And what do we do with all this desk? So now they have all this wasted space behind the monitor because you don't want to put the monitor 25 inches away from you.
Right. They just pile the speakers back there.
Yeah. So, yeah, so now there's an extra flat space. You can pile everything else.
All right. Who have we got next? Oh, we've got Howard. Howard's calling in. Howard's got a question. Howard, where are you calling from?
Right here in Rochester.
Rochester, New York?
Yes.
Hub of civilization in the Western world? Welcome. What's your question?
I think I already know the answer to this, but my wife was working on a paper for school, and she inadvertently selected all the text, hit the space bar, and of course it went away. And then for some reason she pressed save. Is there any way to get that back? I'm running Word 2003.
Almost never.
Man.
If you realize immediately that you've done that...
Before you do anything else...
There are some utilities, like Norton Unerase.
Well, if in fact she had hit the backspace, realized all her data was gone, and hit Control Z,
which is undo.
Undo the last thing she did, which was the delete, and it would all come back.
Right.
But once you've saved it, man, that's harder.
Theoretically, there's a temp file somewhere that has the old version.
Yeah.
If she's been saving backups, yeah, but that's not normal in Office anymore, and so...
Well, a lot of times what Office, especially Word, has that fast save option.
Yeah.
Where instead of saving the whole file, it just saves the changes to the end of the file. So all of the old text is still in there somewhere, and then near the end, there's a command that, oh yeah, they selected and typed delete.
Delete it.
So sometimes it's possible with Word has a what's the name of that?
Recovery.
Yeah, there's a Word temp file that it creates that you can sometimes get your document back. Mm-hmm. But that's like if you just did it this second. If you quit Word, if you shut down the computer, it deletes all those temp files.
Tell you what, if you go on Google...
Okay.
Go to google.com and do a search for accidentally erasing or overwriting a document.
Yeah, so your problem...
They'll send you to a website, though. There is a utility out there that might help you find this a lot easier and recover it.
Yeah, the problem is you didn't erase the file with the recycle bin. You deleted all the text
right.
in the file, and
right.
that makes it even harder.
Yeah. Mm. But go to and do a Google search, and you might there's a utility out there for both Word and Excel.
Of course, we should say restore from your backup is the easiest way to get it back, which is the problem that people don't want to back up.
He doesn't want to tell his wife that.
Until you have your first loss of data, you're not going to feel like you need to back up.
But like I say, he's going to tell his wife, honey, you should have backed up.
Yeah, right.
Back him up.
Word
right up against the wall and say...
Word has an option in it to save backup files automatically. Turn that on. At a minimum, turn that on.
Yeah, absolutely. Our next caller is Ron. Ron, where are you calling from?
From Irondequoit.
Irondequoit, what's up?
Okay, I've got a Kodak digital still camera that can take movies, but the movies are in .mov format, which needs Apple QuickTime. Well, it comes with QuickTime, but the problem is I like to be able to insert one of those movies into a PowerPoint slide, and PowerPoint doesn't support MOV files.
It should.
It doesn't.
Yeah, PowerPoint supports movie files for several
maybe.
Versions.
What version of PowerPoint are you running?
I think, what was it, not the latest one, but the one before that. They called it the Office XP when it came out.
That 2000? That's 2002.
What happens when you try to play the file? I think what it does is it loads QuickTime. In the background.
Yeah, the QuickTime player loads in the background. So
do you have the QuickTime player? That's the real question.
The Kodak installation disk, or the Kodak camera came with QuickTime.
Right, it's a free download from Apple, too.
Right.
I just found a tech note about it. Let's see what it says.
What?
Something about QuickTime in PowerPoint 2002.
If you double-click on the file itself on your hard drive,
okay,
does it play?
Yes.
Boy, it ought to work under PowerPoint.
Oh, it depends on what Kodak it's using. PowerPoint only supports the MCI, my Media Control Interface Compressor-Decompressor. So it depends on what compressor the Kodak camera is compressing the file with.
So you might have to step up to the newer version of PowerPoint.
Yeah, that's probably where the answer is right there.
Yep.
I'm sorry. You can also, of course, try OpenOffice.org.
You can convert the QuickTime to an AVI if you own QuickTime Pro.
Right. But a lot of people don't buy QuickTime.
Yep.
So the other thing, so it's upgrade your Office. Try doing it in OpenOffice.org at OpenOffice.org because that's free. Or you're going to be purchasing
the Microsoft tech database has some things you can do in the registry to make it work too.
Oh, yeah, no.
Don't want to go there.
If you want to do that, you're on your own. We're not going to help you. Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Frank from Greece. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My wife last night on our computer was trying to get rid of a Trojan.vundle virus.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not able to do it. She tried using the Nortons, and the Norton says that they were unable to unable to take care of it.
Right.
All right.
Have you run Spybot and Adaware?
What's it called?
Spybot or Adaware?
Here's the
thing. We're running that.
Have you danced the whole security tango?
Have I what?
danced the Security Tango. Go to securitytango.com. Securitytango.com. It's all one word. And what that will do, what that can do is lead you through, there's a Let's Dance button. Click on that, and it will lead you through a whole series of steps that will help you clean out your entire computer. You download some files. You follow all the steps. Don't skip any of them except the ones that
I
you
always
know,
tell folks to print it off.
Print it off,
and
yes,
then you
exactly,
can check things.
Check them off.
Yeah, you can check them off as you go along.
And don't skip anything except, you know, if you're running Windows XP, skip the Windows ME section. If you're running Windows ME, just take a brickbat to your computer.
Okay.
And follow the whole thing through. That will clean out your system. At the end of it, there's an email link for the wonderful Lori Lynch, who's done a great job of putting together the instructions for doing it next time and the time after that and the time after that. It's a tedious, long process. Most of it, it's just you waiting. Your computer's doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
But you really need to do that to be more careful. And then from then on, you need to be more careful what you click on and where you go and what you look at and all that other stuff. But that's where you really need to be at this point. Before the break, I want to talk a little bit about what happens on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about the Opera browser now being free. 285 of you voted. I'm delighted to say that most of you, 55% of you, are happy with Firefox. A benighted 15% happy with IE, and the rest of you either tried it or are happy with Safari or another browser. This week's poll is, how much are you willing to pay for a really good computer? And, of course, the keywords there are really good. There are some numbers there. Just pick one close to what you'd want to spend. I don't really care. Don't write and tell me I didn't put $208.34.
You should have had more.
Yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
Less.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got two words for you.
More and less.
More and less were the two
more
words.
More or less.
Yeah, more or less. And I just stopped at $1,800. If you're one of the people that spends $2,800 on your computer every year, good for you. Knock yourself out. Don't call me. At any rate, you get to join us at soundbites.org and put in your vote. Right now, we've got about 82 people who voted. $1,800 is the winner, followed by $1,000. Nice range there. When you're done with that, at the bottom of the page, you'll see a little yellow box. From there, you can click on Give Us Your Opinion, and that will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Hello.
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 Very nice.
Hello.
I like it. Hello. And you can put in your opinion on what that's all about, and feel free to take a look around AskNick.com. I think it's a pretty cool website. And then come back to soundbites.org and join us in the forums. Because there's lots of pretty nifty stuff in the forums. When we come back, Microsoft doesn't make enough products yet, you know? They're not integrated well enough, or so Microsoft thinks. And we'll talk about the next thing they want to put in their operating system and find out what you think after this break with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mike Falk, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. All right. Microsoft doesn't have yet a full-blown antivirus product. They're working on one.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
They're working on one. The question they have right now is, when they're done, should they bundle it? Should they make it part of the operating system itself? Well, the question is this a good idea, or does this once again raise the specter of unfair competition and monopolistic practices? You know that McAfee and Symantec, at the very least, are going to sue them.
Yes. I mean, to sit there and make, I'm sorry, like a lot of their other stuff that they include in the bundle, they do a half-assed job of supporting it, and this means they got to have another team, unless they buy up another company,
right?
Constantly looking and updating viruses. Are you going to trust them when they can't even get patches out for like IE in a timely manner to sort out pop-ups and everything else?
Well, and that's the big question, isn't it? The real question comes, who's going to trust them? Lots of people, and it's not just old curmudgeons like me, lots of people have really sat down and said, you know what? They can't get out patches on time. Half their patches require patches. Every patch I put in opens up another hole. I'm going to buy an antivirus product from them?
I don't think so.
Then again, if they're going to put it in, you know that the only way that they're going to make it work is to make it so deeply ingrained in the operating system that you can't live without it, and then that becomes another target for the virus writers.
Hello.
So yeah. I think that a lot of us are not impressed with that.
Depressed.
Let's just say impressed with that idea. I'm not entirely certain that that one's going to work out. We'd love to hear what you think about it. You can give us a call and let us know. But it's an interesting problem. Microsoft just reorganized themselves into a bunch of different groups. One of the things that Microsoft has a problem with is they're too danged big.
Mm-hmm.
They've become cumbersome. You know, you can't turn the Queen Mary as fast as you can turn a little putt-putt. And they have a problem. They basically, you know, and Bill Gates admits this, they missed the internet entirely. They were like 2 years behind everybody else in the internet. Now, once they figured out there was an internet out there, they caught up pretty quick. But the point is,
Al Gore must have told
him. Al Gore, I think he let it out of the bag. Doggone him, what was he thinking? But that's the kind of thing that they had a problem with. And now they're going into three separate units. The problem I have with that is they've added yet another layer of management.
Just like
in order to manage those three units. If they were slow to begin with, adding more management is not the way to solve the problem. I mean, I'm not an MBA. I don't even play one on television anymore. But I don't think that adding more management is the way to solve a problem of being too slow and cumbersome. So I'm not entirely certain that's gonna work out. I don't get it.
There was some interesting memo circulating this week at Microsoft, and apparently, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there's memos where, you know, the internet is the death of Microsoft, and now the Google is the death of Microsoft.
Google is the big villain now in the Microsoft halls. It used to be Steve Jobs in whatever he was doing at the time. You know, he was just like walking down the street, it was bad. And then it was Larry Ellison, the folks at Sun, and the folks at Oracle, and all of those people. Now it's Google, and one of the things that Google has talked about doing but has not really come out with, and now they say they're not going to come out with it, is an online office suite where you can go with your browser and create a word processing document or a spreadsheet or a presentation or a database and never leave your browser. The reason that makes Microsoft unhappy is because that means you never need an operating system. If you've got anything that will run a browser, you don't need Windows anymore.
They could probably do that now with OpenOffice because it's Java-based.
Well, that's just it. That's who they were in talks with.
Well, a lot of the folks with the internet TVs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You know, they sit there with their keyboards in front of their TV and surf the internet and everything else, be able to compose a letter and send it right from there.
Right. Or your PDAs that run that run web browsers now. Your phone runs a web browser.
That's probably related to the Microsoft announcement that they will not be making a Unix version of Office.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, we're going to take another break, but I've got more questions for Mike Falk when we come back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mike Falk, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that would be Soundlight.
What's that name?
On 1180 WHAF.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Mike Falk.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Yes, he's Rob Linton. And
why get a bus chops?
No. I'm not going to say a word because there's nothing I can say
that would
be clean.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you got this place wired like RG&E for crying out loud. I can't do anything without knocking webcams over and unplugging internet connection.
Oh, there it goes. He just broke it.
I'm sorry, but this is in the way.
It's the end of the show.
Yeah. It's the end of the show. Nice.
Nobody's looking anyway.
That's good. That's
there's
lovely.
A lot of people look. In the fact, they call and why hasn't the picture been updated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, hand me that because now it's pointing right at the light.
Listen,
here, aim it at Rob for the rest of the show.
We have, listen, all right, we're going to go. I'm taking control now. You know, we're in trouble when I'm the adult supervision. We have Mike Falk, our guest from Falk Electric, F-A-L-K, Falk Electric. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about home automation and broadband over power. Now, we've talked, stop it. We've talked about, just be polite. We've talked about home automation, but you also do broadband over power.
Broadband over power line, very generically, is just the ability to network your computer using the electrical wiring in your home.
To get internet access.
To get, it can be to get internet access. It can be to get room to room.
Right, right.
Just sharing, sharing files between computers.
Sure. It can be just to extend your network to that troublesome room that for some reason is fully encased in metal.
Yeah. But I have one of those. The place my wife wants to put her laptop, of course, the library, the one room in the house that has a curved, like I said, I'm in a 120-year-old home. The wall curves, so I'm sure it's full of chicken wire and everything else. It's just basically a Faraday cage. It's the one room in the house I can't get wireless.
Yeah, it used to be you didn't want to string a wire to that room. Right. Now it's the wireless doesn't reach.
Right.
Yeah.
So now what you're saying is I can plug some sort of thing into my router upstairs.
Yes.
Plug that into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Downstairs, plug something else into the wall and into her computer, and bang, she's got internet access?
She would have a screaming 14 megabits per second internet access.
Woo!
As long as there are no maladies in your house wiring.
And then we're back to the
other
thing.
There blows that theory.
Your neighbors can also get that that internet or your network feed also.
Up until
the
I hit the transformer.
That's right. The transformer is the hard block in that particular system.
And there's no other hard block you can put in.
We could certainly give you a cervicectomy and put an isolation transformer on your home.
He said that with a smile on his face, too.
I like that idea. Well, I can see by the clock on the wall and the finger
music.
That Rob is holding up, that I got 1 minute.
Who's
left.
Making this music here?
That's what that is. So I'd like to thank our guest, Mike Falk, who not only gave us incredibly good information, but also put up with our nonsense both on and off the air. He was quite a trooper. Mike, thank you very much. We'll have you back on again sometime to do much more of this, because this was both informative and fun. We talked about some real interesting things, and you can join in the discussion of those things on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. And when you do, shut up. And just knock the this camera better be pretty sturdy, because we've knocked it over about 10 times. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mike Falk, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco, and you've been watching Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Millions of